much you want to bet?
I don't bet.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1.
You're on.
Welcome into Bet the Board, the playoff edition podcast, as we'll preview all things wild card weekend. We'll be joined by Payne Insider in just a matter of seconds. But let us be the 1,378th people to wish you a very happy and healthy new year in this 2015. May it be filled with continued prosperity and pain. I'm not going to say we have an attractive slate of four games to go through, but we do have NFL football on the docket for this weekend.
NFL football is big, very, very ugly. Ugly a card. A couple of interesting games. Obviously, we'll cover them all in detail on this podcast. Maybe spit out a winner for the new year for all of our loyal listeners.
And for those new to the podcast, or if you've been sick of hearing our voices all football season long, man, on the other end of the line, you can follow on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter, at Todd Furman. We did have a number of questions come in as part of our Ask the Bet the Board hashtag regarding a future, so we'll get to that in greater detail towards the end. But Payne, we may as well jump in, and let's go right in order. We'll go in chronological order rather than the rotation. So let's start with the early game on Saturday. Arizona on the road at Carolina. Carolina opened a 4-point favorite, total of 39. We've since seen that number balloon as high as 7 before there was a little bit of resistance, and a total from 39 down to 38. We'll call Carolina a 6.5-point favorite right now for podcast purposes.
Yeah, I know we talked about this game Sunday night, and there's a little debate as to where this number should open. Did open as low as 4. I thought a good measuring point, we talked about this, throw it in that dead number, 5, 5.5. I know the Greek did that, and kind of let the betting market dictate where it's going to go from there. At 4, it just opens up some liability for the sports books with siding and middling options. So Arizona, the market perception on them is just very, very bad right now. Carolina, the complete opposite of that. And we have seen professional money trickle into the market just a little bit each day from open. Did get as high as 7, as you alluded to. Saw some resistance at 7. I don't know where this is going to go from here. We know professionals are in Carolina, but at 7, make some things attractive backing Arizona. Lindley now getting a little more acclimated to the offense. I do. I like the under a little bit in this. I think no lower than 38. That would probably be a way to look in this one. But not a lot of interest in this game, especially at the current number.
And I can imagine most sportsbooks won't have a ton of interest in this one either. This one expected to be the lowest betting handle of all four wildcard games. But Payne, we talk about perception all the time, and when you look at Carolina, winners of 4 straight, defense hasn't allowed more than 17 points in a single game in that 4-game winning streak. And when you look at that, how do you go about handicapping the Panthers, knowing if there still is value, as clearly the market indicates with this number going from 4 to 7, or almost paying at a premium to try and back them now amid their streak in Arizona, almost at a buy low all time for the entire season?
You know, that's kind of the question when you look at each of these games, and you know every game is its own entity. It's just a matter of, and I know a lot of blanket statements will get thrown out there is say, hey, you know, you're buying Arizona at an all-time low, Carolina's at an all-time high, but the reality is, what are these two teams right now at this very moment? And just because Arizona could be at an all-time low and Carolina at an all-time high, if you make the number 9, it's really irrelevant of those two things. And so I know we've had some professionals that I've talked to with some of their math numbers, current form, when you really look at Carolina, more so a byproduct recently of potentially getting healthy and not so much as being down or being a bad team because they played in a bad division, but they're finally getting healthy. The defense is getting healthy. Stewart is providing, he's healthy finally, it looks like, and he's one of the best backs in the league when he is healthy. Cam Newton, obviously, you know, had the back injury, but he's been willing to run the ball. And this is one of those games where if you're backing Carolina and you basically look at what Arizona's done the last few weeks, the defense kind of is their staple. I don't think it's as good as a defense as in years past. And what we've seen with the injuries is this defense starts to get worn down. And when their offense isn't able to sustain some drives and keep them off the field, they've worn down and their games have snowballed late in these games. So that's one thing to look for here is Arizona might be within this number for three quarters, but their defense has that potential to wear down because of that depth, the losses of injuries, and that's one thing. I mean, the professional money is on Carolina. Obviously, it's 6.5 or 7. I'm not running to lay it. You know, they laid a better number than that, but that's basically how I look at this game.
Yeah, I think you make a compelling case for the under when you dig into Carolina's final score last week against Atlanta. This is still only a team that mustered a shade over 300 yards of total offense, was the beneficiary of two defensive touchdowns, both on interception returns. And Cam Newton, as you said, didn't show the reluctance to run the football. 51 yards was the team's leading rusher, Jonathan Stewart, 13 carries, 49 yards. Of course, hard to argue with the position being taken on Carolina. Side for me, I think it's real difficult here, and I would make a slight case to go under, as you alluded to, at 38. A game sure to generate a little bit more buzz and fan interest, betting interest, call it what you will. Baltimore and Pittsburgh, you're looking at the Steelers right now, a three-point favorite. We'll call them minus $1.20 as a consensus, minus $1.25 in a lot of spots. Totals come down from 47 to 45, some weather potentially expected in the forecast. But, of course, the biggest injury news today, Le'Veon Bell officially ruled out. But there's a key injury on the Baltimore side that you don't think is being reflected in this number.
Yeah, I mean, Eugene Monroe, to me, is extremely significant. That's going to be a huge loss at left tackle for Baltimore. One that, you know, a lot of people don't really talk about. And so that's very significant here. Really, for me, I'm not a huge running back guy, but Le'Veon Bell, when you look at who's next to tote the rock for Pittsburgh, you're looking at their second leading rusher still being LeGarrette Blount, who was waived in week 11. Dre Archer, really not that guy. They signed Ben Tate this week. So it'll be interesting to see with that weather coming in, that could be a bigger role. If this is going to get wet, if it's going to get sloppy, that potent passing game of Pittsburgh might not be as effective, and that's going to be the key here. If there is good weather, at this point, you know, you got to just put the ball in Big Ben's hands, and when you talk about that Baltimore secondary, it's beat up. It's very bad. Since week 8, you're talking about a team that's allowing 65% completions and nearly 7.5 yards per pass, and they're not facing anybody that's great. Few good guys in there, but you're talking Connor Shaw, Case Keenum, Blake Bortles. I mean, secondary is very bad for Baltimore. So this is a tough game for me to gauge. Numbers moving a little bit both side and total due to weather, due to injuries on both sides. Number did open at Pinnacle, Pittsburgh minus 3 plus 102. So we've seen a slight trickle that way. I think there's going to be, from what I've heard, some opposition on this game. Professionals, some are looking towards Pittsburgh. Others were grabbing the hook with Baltimore. And for me, we're going to talk about this a lot with a lot of these playoff games. And we talked about it a little bit last week and what to look for some of these playoff teams. And for me, a great indicator is strength of schedule. And we've seen in this wild card week, teams with the better strength of schedule seem to do very, very well. In this week, when you talk about the strength of schedule, most of them are underdogs with the better strength of schedule. So at 3.5, I think you'll see some Baltimore money, but there will be some professionals looking to lay 3 on this Pittsburgh side, just like there was last week in that Sunday night game, professionals on both sides of that game.
Now, what kind of adjustment do you make for Le'Veon Bell's absence? You talk about a running back, and we do at great lengths about how you can't do a whole lot, especially around key numbers, even for a player as dynamic as Bell, who's accounted for roughly 40% of the total offense that Pittsburgh has gained going back to week 11. But when we take a look at the box score from the last time these two teams met, Bell 10 carries, 20 yards, had 5 catches, 38 yards. Of course, LeGarrette Blount was still on the roster then. He gobbled up 10 carries. But do you really drastically have to change the way you approach handicapping Pittsburgh without Bell? Or for the reasons you mentioned, talking about their ability to exploit that Ravens secondary, in this particular matchup, you don't have to do a whole lot accounting for him not being out there.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to make significant adjustments, in my mind, for running backs. But when you talk about what he's done for this offense and that number that you used there, that 40% number of the total yards gained since week 11, he's obviously an integral part. And the key here is the drop-off to the next position. You know, we know what Dre Archer is. He's not an every-down back. When you're signing Ben Tate off the street this week, you know, that could be an issue, and it could be a bigger issue based on this weather. So, you know, a lot of elements. Obviously, the number didn't budge much, and when you talk about a player of Le'Veon Bell's caliber, when it was announced that he wasn't going to play. But again, at that same very time, Eugene Monroe is getting announced out as a left tackle. So there wasn't huge move in the marketplace. So you don't want to overreact. It's clearly not, you know, going to be a huge move around this number. But if there is weather involved, which it looks like it is when you look right now at this weather forecast, about an 80% chance of rain at kick, and then right around 10 p.m., which is right around that second halftime, 100% chance. So if Pittsburgh isn't able to chuck it around the park, not having a running back could play a much bigger role than anybody can factor into a number.
And when you talk about this Pittsburgh team, some interesting trends that have emerged, and of course these aren't predictive or indicative of the way the game will go, more for fun and argument's sake. The over's actually 11-0 in Pittsburgh's last 11 home playoff games, so funny to think about the Steel Curtain defense and what we've grown accustomed to expecting from Pittsburgh. And the over 8-0 in Pittsburgh's last 8 playoff games in total, over 9-3 in Pittsburgh's last 12 home games overall. So this is a team, obviously, with a new-look offense, as we've seen over the last couple of years, looking to air it out, and as you mentioned, with the weather. Now, Payne, Baltimore on the other side, what are some of the things that you look for them to try and do if they're going to be successful, knowing that Moreau isn't out there and that Flacco's really been under duress every time he drops back to pass, especially if they're unable to get a running game on track?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the big thing here. Pittsburgh's defense has shown some signs in some recent weeks. It looks like they're on schedule to get Polamalu and Ike Taylor back, so that's somewhat of a decent boost. They're obviously past their prime, but Baltimore's key, and it is what they are. They're a physical team. Their defensive line, obviously, they get Nada back, but offensively, their offensive line was kind of their glue to their offense. When you talk about Justin Forsett, basically a back that's moved around the league, and you know he was in the top 10 in rushing this year, that offensive line, that physical style that they like to employ, that's going to be the key here. They're going to have to establish a ground game, and if they're not able to do that, you know, obviously they're not going to have a chance in this ball game. But that's the key. I know there's some injuries on that offensive line, and that's we saw it last week against the Browns. I mean, there was pressure on Flacco the entire time. It's going to be extremely tough for Baltimore to protect Flacco, so they have to get a ground game going here. It's their only shot.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the weather, like we said, could play a factor. Total be interesting to see where that number settles. Some 44.5 and 45 out there now as it's trended down from the open, but a little bit of resistance on the number at 3-20. I think I'd be surprised if we saw 3.5 painted for this particular football game. Given everything that's gone on, but not a strong opinion for me to validate betting the side or total in this game. From Saturday's games, we'll head to Sunday in just a second, but just to get everybody caught up to speed, man on the other end of the line, Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider or visit his website, PayneInsider.com. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman or visit my website, ToddsTake.com. And Payne, all we've heard all season and since he signed this big contract is how Andy Dalton can't win the big game. Yet, lo and behold, here we are. He's taken Cincinnati back to the postseason yet again. Unfortunately for him, he'll have to do it without the services, most likely, of his most talented offensive weapon in the form of A.J. Green. That hasn't stopped money coming in on Cincy. This number open, Indy minus 4, total of 50. Under money, you can explain down to 48.5, but the side trending down to that 3.5. Even 3 laying substantial juice at minus 130 out there in the market.
Yeah, when you talk about this one, again, another strength of schedule advantage for Cincinnati. You also have a same-season revenge. Cincinnati went into Indianapolis early this year, did not fare too well, but they're familiar with the environment, and that should help here. Opened 4, got down to as low as is 3, minus 15, minus 20. A.J. Green gets announced out with the concussion. Seen it start to tick back up a little bit in Indianapolis' favor. Colts, you know, we've talked about them a lot on this podcast this season. It's a tough team for professionals to gauge because of one man, and that's Andrew Luck. Not a very good team surrounding him, but he just seems to make them very competitive, and it's a great ATS team since Luck's been there for Indianapolis. So at 3, you know, certainly not looking to buck that. Hill's a huge addition for Cincinnati in their offense. He's going to have to be a huge, huge part of this game. We saw Andy Dalton again last week. Costly interceptions, costly mistakes. He is what he is at this point. He doesn't have a strong arm. We've also talked a lot about this Indianapolis defense being a little bit better at home. And here in this playoff spot, for me, I know professionals are on Cincinnati. They took the 4 at 3. You know, gun to head, probably play Indianapolis. Not many threes out there. Wouldn't lay 30 cents either. So it's, again, another game for me that I would look to pass. Was surprisingly looking at the over. A.J. Green obviously hurts that a little bit. We'll continue to monitor where this total comes, where it goes from here based on A.J. Green being out and all that information. I think at this stage, you know, I was looking over, but now that I'm looking at this game plan without A.J. Green, it's going to have to be a steady, steady dose of Hill.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the Colts, as you mentioned, a team definitely difficult for the professionals to try and evaluate properly. Indy just seems to play better football as well at home, 9-2-1 against the spread their last 12 home games. We know about Cincinnati and their well-chronicled struggles in the postseason, now 0-6 straight up and against the spread their last six playoff games. And without A.J. Green, it could be a bit of a daunting task, despite having arguably better personnel at 21 of the 22 positions out there on the field. A game that I think, if we were CS3 flat, I would make a case for the Colts myself, but really want no part of investing in that particular football game. Now, as we shift gears towards, I don't know if I want to call it the marquee matchup of opening weekend, but definitely two teams that are looking to get a monkey off their back quarterback-wise, with Tony Romo against Matt Stafford. Dallas is 6.5-point favorite. There are some sevens out there in the market as well. And a total of 48 on this football game. Amazing to think we saw Dallas, only a 3-point favorite a few weeks ago at home against Indy, now laying nearly a full touchdown as the Lions come a-calling.
Really tough one, and this is the question, and, you know, I don't know who would like to answer. Which QB do you want in this game? I mean,
I'm taking Tony Romo. I'm not thinking twice. I'm taking Tony Romo with a ground game that I trust a lot more than Matt Stafford and his inability to spread the ball around the field. So I think what we've seen this year, Payne, you have to rate Romo a little bit better in this type of scenario, no?
Absolutely. There's no question this year. But you always get that lingering thought in your mind. If things don't start fast for Romo and the Cowboys, you get that thought in the back of your mind as a player, as an athlete, and it's here we go again. And they've been able to shed some of those things this season with the 12-4 record. And we've talked about it. We talked about Stafford last week, and we've talked about him all year on the road against good competition. Now it seems like it's made public, and everybody's talking about it. But after last week, now 0-16 for Matthew Stafford on the highway against a team above 500. We know about teams traveling 3 weeks in a row. This is going to be Detroit's third road game in as many weeks. So very, very tough. I know people did grab the 7. Some respected groups did grab the 7. For me, not as much interest on the side as there is the total here. For me, the under makes some sense in this spot.
Yeah, I think you're going to see two teams come out trying to establish a ground game, at least to a certain extent, when you look at Detroit and Dallas and the way things are done. How much different does the handicap change as far as the total is concerned for you, Payne, if Ndamukong Suh wasn't going to be out there, had the suspension held up?
Oh, it's huge. It's mammoth. It's when you talk about what they've allowed this year on the ground with him in the lineup versus with him outside the lineup, you're talking nearly an extra yard per rush attempt for the opposing team with him out of the lineup. Nick Fairley, he's been out for nearly 2 months now. He's a long shot to play, but they're saying he might have a chance if he were to go. I don't know how much of a boost it would be pairing Sue with Fairley. Obviously, that's a great tandem in terms of trying to stop the run, but all the reports I've seen is if Fairley does go, he's going to be on a snap count. And the rumors are he shed so much weight. He's about 285, 290 pounds. So I don't know how much of an effect Fairley would have if he was able to go here. But partly the reason why I do like the under, and specifically the first half under, if you can get that hook, I know Chris is dealing it at 24.5, is I think these teams, you know, teams have egos, coaches have egos, players have egos, and I think the initial point in this game is you're going to have the prick measuring contest. You know, who's better? Is it the offensive line for Dallas? Is it the Detroit's defensive line? And I think the first few series, we're going to see a lot of ground and pound. I really do. And try to set that tone of who the bigger man is. And I think that bodes well to looking towards that first half under.
Yeah, I think you make a lot of compelling points to try and back the first half under, maybe even more so than the full game. But if we, as we've seen in the past, the number 7 says Dallas may get out to a lead. They've been more than content to try and establish the ground game when taking that lead. And I think to protect their defense, that'll be their chosen methodology. So I would agree with you wholeheartedly that under seems to be the best play in that game and maybe one of the better bets that you can make for an opening weekend. Me personally, I don't see anything that's truly worthy of a full position in any of these four games. Of course, haven't delved completely into the prop markets yet, which oftentimes will provide a little bit more opportunity, especially as we get into the postseason.
Yeah, I know we'll start to look at some props. Limits will rise a little bit here for the playoffs in terms of props to make it worthwhile. But again, not a ton of them are out right now. We'll look over them in the next 24 hours here before games kick off Saturday and Sunday and see if we can find some value in the prop market.
And no doubt about it. And before we close up shop on the Wild Card Weekend podcast, like we said, this is the time of year where questions, they come in fast and furious regarding the best way to try and profit from your futures that you may have been sitting on since week 1, week 12, or even purchase right before this very weekend. You look at the current market, and for those folks that don't have the numbers in front of them, no real surprise as to who are listed as your favorite to take home the Lombardi Trophy. Seattle Seahawks at the top of the list right now, and a little bit better than 2-1 if you look around. Patriots a shade better than 3. Broncos and Packers right about that 5-6 range, and then you see a bigger drop-off. First question I'll ask you, Payne, if you're looking at the market now, any of these teams offer value to win their respective conferences or maybe take home the entire thing?
You know, I'll let this be known, and you know me now, not a huge, huge futures player. I don't think there's always a lot of value in it in terms of their true odds. Obviously, you're going to be able to pick and choose one out of the group here and there that do offer value. And I know one we've talked a lot about on the podcast were the Ravens at 70-1, and I know you grabbed that ticket there in town in Vegas, and they moved accordingly. So that's one, you know, that we'll address later on in this podcast. But for this purpose, if I had to pick one, if I had to right now as it stands pick one future, you know, you can get the Cowboys as high as 12.5-1. I think with that home game, I kind of think Dallas has turned that corner. I think they're a different team. If they can get past this first week, I think they match up well against some of the other teams. I really do. With that ground game, you're going to be able to go into Lambeau Field if you need to. You're going to be able to play Seattle. I know Wagner's back, and that changes things a little bit. But the Cowboys are going to have confidence. You know, they've already gone into Seattle and handled business. So at 12.5-1, you know, that makes some sense to me a little bit.
Yeah, I would definitely echo those same sentiments. I think Dallas makes a lot of sense. The Ravens, as you mentioned, yeah, sitting on a ticket, not overly confident that I think I'll be able to cash that, but we'll cross that bridge if Baltimore can dodge a bullet in Heinz Field this weekend, which leads to the next biggest question. People talking about hedging, and I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there with Carolina tickets at 150-1 or other large prices that may be widely available. You know, what's your thought on trying to hedge a ticket this far out? I mean, my sentiment is always you got to win a game or two before you're going to try and chop into it. Have to imagine if you're sitting on a ticket at 150-1, too, that the stake factor that you're risking there isn't exactly wallet breaking if they go down, if that ticket goes down the drain.
Yeah, I mean, for me, again, you know, my philosophy, I'm a little more risk averse than most, and I like riding some of my futures a little deeper than I probably should. And also, it depends on the number you're getting. Carolina, obviously, and the other thing is here, the matchup, the actual physical matchup being played. Have you done your due diligence on the right side here? And you know, we talked about this in this podcast earlier. Is Carolina has taken professional money, so that matters to me. And I'd be, you know, less willing to risk some of my value on my future bet in hedging in this round. So for me, even with 150-1 ticket, if I had it in my back pocket, I'm going to let it ride. I'm a little riskier than most people. It's obviously you can get off the position or, you know, hedge into it a little bit. But for me, on these futures, I really want to extract the most value as humanly possible. And again, we've handicapped it and we know professionals are in Carolina, and because of those two things, I'd be a little more willing to let the Carolina future ride another week.
And for me personally, I mean, my philosophy on futures is a little bit different. I spend quite a bit of time investing in them. Some work out a heck of a lot better than others. I think you kind of have to get down to a scenario where there's only one or two games left to hedge. If you're trying to chop into a futures ticket with four games to go, especially on the likes of a Carolina or one of the other long shots out there, knowing that they'll most likely be a potential double-digit underdog for a road trip to Seattle, it gets to be price prohibitive, and hopefully you haven't risked too much money on such a long shot that even if you were to lose that bet, you figure maybe a quarter of a position max, it's not going to cripple your entire bankroll. And sometimes it is difficult to get even a break-even stake out of a ticket. That's why it's a future bet, and that's why you're typically betting into a market that holds 30 cents on the dollar, even in the most competitive shops.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. If they were to move forward, I think you'd have to look, you know, getting some of that value out of your Carolina ticket. In terms of this week, though, with, you know, the information we're providing and who's on Carolina, you know, for me, it would, I would probably let that ride into the next round and see what you can cook up from there, especially when we talk about what you alluded to earlier, is at 150-1 that the ticket's probably not that expensive.
And for folks that are sitting on Arizona Cardinal tickets from earlier in the year, I actually wish you my condolences. It's 77-1 going into the playoffs. Can't imagine this is where you thought you'd be sitting after a team won 11 regular season games and you purchased a ticket before the year at 40-1. But that's what makes futures tough, trying to know where you can get the most value and what numbers will actually trend in your particular direction. As we've seen, the Packers number at the peak about 15-1. Seattle could have been purchased at 8. New England right around that 15-1 range after that travesty on Monday night against Kansas City and Denver. I haven't seen them above anything above 6.5 or 7 this year, Payne. Have you seen them inch much higher than that?
No, not really. And again, you know, some of these futures, I know we're also sitting on, we're able to grab a really, really, really good number on the Packers to start the season at 18-1. So it'll be interesting to see. I will maybe talk about that one next week after their bye week and address it at that time. But some of these futures, you know, we've talked about them in offering value. After that hot Bengals start, what did you see as a price on that? I believe they started 3-0, and everybody was, you know, this is the Bengals, this is their second coming. And now you can get them as high as 46-1 into the playoffs. So always tough to gauge the future market.
Yeah, pretty incredible to know what's out there. I will say, though, that anybody who is smart enough to grab the Dallas Cowboys at 100-1, I do envy that ticket quite a bit. I think that may have plenty of legs. After the Cowboys lost their season opener to San Francisco. Same time, same place next week, Payne, a Friday recording time for our loyal listeners to tune in and get their full dose of the divisional round playoffs.
Absolutely. Fridays, we'll do playoff talk from here on out.
Sounds like a plan, my friend. Best of luck this weekend. And more importantly, best of luck to you all, you loyal Bet the Board podcast listeners. Remember, the NFL playoffs are a marathon, not a sprint. You have 11 games. You don't have to be invested in every single one if you can't find an angle. But if you do decide to plunk down your hard-earned money this weekend, best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.